Welcome to Whiskey Cast, Cask Strength Conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 297 for January 9th, 2011. Coming up in a few minutes.
People just used to enjoy whiskey as it is. They used to buy it, they used to drink it, they didn't compare it, they didn't collect it, they didn't try to see how much I can get on eBay. And because of that, documentation wasn't kept.
That's Shai Gilboa. You may remember Shai and his father, Gideon, from the Fagiel series last May. Shai has been looking at the history of a very obscure blended scotch, and part of his research included asking some of his friends to taste this scotch from a 1970s-era bottling and today. I'm glad to be one of Shai's friends who took part in his project, and we'll discuss it in a few minutes. I'll also have the calendar of events, the emails of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department. First, though, let's look at the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Some great news to report. For the last couple of weeks, I've mentioned the plight of Tuthill Town Spirits founder Ralph Arenzo, who was critically injured in a car crash several days before Christmas. He's been unconscious since the accident, but his family reports Ralph woke up Saturday with no apparent signs of head injuries. He's still in critical condition because of other injuries, but his doctors and family are now more optimistic than ever. They're still passing along messages to Ralph from the website set up after the crash, and there's a link at the WhiskeyCast website so you can send your own message to Ralph. Our thoughts are still with Ralph and his family. Sir Ian Noble, the founder of the Gaelic whiskey company Prabhan na Linn on the Isle of Skye, died on Christmas Day after a long illness. While he's best known for his work to promote the use of the Gaelic language in Scotland, he spent his final years trying to build a second distillery on Skye. His company also produces the Poitou single malt and the blends Chebec and McNamara. Sir Ian Noble was 75. Early Times is one of the legendary names in bourbon, but for nearly 30 years now, the U.S. version has been labeled Kentucky Whiskey, meaning it's matured in refilled bourbon barrels. The export version of Early Times has always used new barrels and is sold as a bourbon. There's now a new Early Times bourbon that will be available in the U.S. starting later this month. Early Times 354 will be bottled at 40% ABV, or 80 proof, and the 354 refers to the number on the original Early Times distillery permit. I'll have tasting notes as soon as I can track down a sample. More data now confirming the problem Scotch whiskey faces in its home market. The Herald reports a new study by the analysis firm Keynote claims Scotch whiskey sales in the UK fell almost 25% between 2005 and 2009. Scotch held 31% of the UK market in 2005, but that fell to 24.3% by the end of 2009 as younger drinkers went for lighter spirits like vodka. However, the Scotch Whiskey Association points out that whiskey sales in the UK rose 2% in 2009 through September of 2010, and that may be a sign that things are changing for the better. Finally, an update on the progress of the Water of Life drive. I heard from Charity Water this week. The money raised during last fall's campaign will be used this year for a water project in Ethiopia. They also asked me what we wanted to have inscribed on a small plaque to be put on the well, but I didn't have enough time to ask you for suggestions. So the plaque will read, "From WhiskeyCast.com listeners around the world with love." I hope you approve. That's the news, brought to you by Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made. Sharon Yanai is the latest weekly winner in Isle of Jura's Wish You Were Here Travel Photo Contest. She wins an Olympus digital camera for her photo, and you still have time to enter a travel photo of your own and tell the world why it inspires you. Three first prize winners will get to go to Jura this summer with a friend, stay at the Jura Lodge, receive an Olympus Pen digital camera, and take a photography masterclass with National Geographic's Jim Richardson. The entry deadline is coming up quickly, January 21st, and you'll find all of the details at the WhiskeyCast website. The Wish You Were Here photo contest is presented by Olympus, Visit Scotland, and Isle of Jura, in a world of its own. Let's check the emails of the week now, brought to you by Oban. Now, if you get an email with the subject line, "Why I have the greatest wife in the world," You might be a little nervous about opening it up. Lord knows what you're likely to find inside. But that's how the email I got this week from James Shanks of Brooklyn, New York was labeled. And I'm glad I opened it. Here's what James had to say. Hi, Mark. Happy New Year. My birthday is on December 31st, and this year my wife, an amazing cook, made me a fabulous dinner, and I thought you would appreciate the dessert portion. To accompany the vanilla cheesecake she made, she also got me a selection of four scotches. Laphroaig 10-year, my standard, Lagavulin 16-year, my new favorite, Glenrothes Select Reserve, and Kalila Distiller's Edition, the only one I had never tried before. As you can see, I'm an Isla fan. We had our own private blind taste tests, and I impressed myself by being able to pick them out on smell alone. The Glenrothes was easy to spot, as it was the odd man out, all others being Isla whiskies. On tasting, I actually mixed up the Laphroaig and Lagavulin, which surprised me a lot. I don't usually have a selection like this all on hand at the same time, as I usually get one bottle at a time, but I have to say it was nice to be able to try them side by side. My wife did the tasting, too, and also mixed up the Laphroaig and Lagavulin. We didn't really come out with a winner, per se, but we did agree that the Glenrothes was probably the best accompaniment to the cheesecake. It was a great evening and a lot of fun. I know I am a lucky guy. Well, James, you certainly are a lucky guy, and happy birthday. Now, Rickard Soderberg in Sweden used the WhiskeyCast Facebook page to point out a possible discrepancy in the ratings on the website. In your ratings of the Bowmore Tempest 2 batches, you say that the number 1 batch is 56% ABV, and the number 2 batch is 55.3% ABV. On my bottle of Tempest Batch 1, it says 55.3%. Could I have been confused? On the Whiskey Exchange webpage, it says 55.3 about the number 1 batch. Okay. When I tasted batch number 1 last year in Victoria with Bowmore's Jamie McKenzie, I wrote down 56% in my tasting notes. And the bottle of batch 2 I brought back from Isla is definitely 55.3%. I've done some checking on this and found several websites listing different strengths for the first batch of Tempest, everything from 53.5% to 56.5%. Batch number 1 is no longer available, and Bowmore does not list it separately on the website. I'll try to get a definitive answer this week and post it on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page. And finally, Simon Seaton emailed from Aberdeen, Scotland. Mark, not sure if this is an issue for anyone else, but I thought I would mention it anyway. I listen to most of my podcasts in the car, as many others do, through the car iPod system. The titles and menus are chosen through a display on the dashboard. The problem is the number of characters is limited, and therefore when I have multiple episodes of WhiskeyCast, the limited number of characters mean I only see on the screen WhiskeyCast Epi, and therefore I have no easy way to select which one I want, as episode number and date are not displayed. Other podcasts tend to use a title rather than an episode number, so this is not an issue with those. I may be unique in this, but thought you may be interested in making a slight change to that way you manage titles, i.e. episode 296, WhiskeyCast, etc. Anyway, keep up the good work. After a year of listening to WhiskeyCast, the ScotchCast, and more recently, the Malted Muse, I'm going to my first whiskey festival, Whiskey Live London, in March. First time I've heard this one, Simon, but I certainly understand how it can be confusing. I've had that happen to me in rental cars with iPod systems, too, from time to time. Let me think about it and see what might be possible. Got to keep in mind that one little change can have a bunch of unintended consequences, say with the website, the smartphone apps, and things like that. So I really need some time to look at it before I make a final decision. Now, if you have a question or a comment, I'd love to hear from you. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and the emails of the week are brought to you by Oban Single Malt Whiskey from the coastal town of Oban since 1794. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The L&B Whiskey Cafe in Amsterdam will hold Whiskey Weekend on the 15th and 16th. The Kosher Whiskey Festival is on the 16th in Yonkers, New York. Robin Cooper of Sky Spirits will be leading a Burns Supper at the City Club of San Francisco January 21st. I'll be in Victoria, British Columbia that same weekend for the Victoria Whiskey Festival. And even if you don't have tickets, you can join us that afternoon for a live taping of WhiskeyCast at the Hotel Grand Pacific starting around 2 o'clock. McTears will have its next whiskey auction January 25th in Glasgow. Whiskey Lux India will be on the 29th in Gorgon, India. And Whiskey Live Tokyo will be February 19th and 20th. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Just click the Laphroaig banner at the WhiskeyCast website to become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay. Last May, I met Shai Gilboa and his father, Gideon Fleischman, on Islay, and we've been friends ever since. Shai has been working on a unique project for the last few months that he refers to as Whiskey Archaeology. Now, Stewart's Cream of the Barley is a fairly unrenowned blended scotch. Been around for years, the brand has passed through several hands over that time, but it's never received a lot of attention until now. Shai joined me via Skype from his home in Israel to talk about his project. Tell me, first of all, Shai, how you came up with the idea for this experiment.
Well, I was very intrigued when I met this new blend I didn't know at a friend's house. He told me, listen, I've got this bottle stashed away for the past about 20, 30 years. He just forgot about it. He took it out and said, okay, open up. I don't know what it is. Just let's drink it. I looked at the shape of the bottle and said, something is weird here. I'm not going to open this bottle. And I told him, listen, you're going to put it aside. I'm going to try and find out what this bottle is before we're going to drink it. And out of sheer interest, I started to dig in the internet until I got to the current owners of the blend, which are Chivas Brothers, via Ricard Pernod. And just, you know, from one thing to another, I just got all the details and as many details as I could about this blend. And then I just wanted to try it, but I didn't want to open this bottle because it's basically a collector's item.
And this bottle dated back to the 70s, right?
Yeah, it also has the Israeli tax banner on top of it, which was in use in Israel until the beginning of the 80s. So they just bought it from a friend who had a liquor shop or something of the sort and just forgot all about it. And, you know, while they were doing some reorganization in the kitchen cupboards, they found it and said, okay, it's time to drink it. But it's from the 1970s, and I got confirmation about that from Sandy Hislop, who apparently was one of the blenders who had to take care of this blend at one point of his career.
Now, explain the experiment you decided to put together here, because it involved tracking down a current bottle of Stewart's Cream of the Barley, right?
I learned from Shiva's brother somehow that the blend still continues to this day in a different component structure, in different ownership, and I decided I just want to try it to see how this blend is, even though, you know, 40 years later from the original bottle, because I didn't want to open the original bottle. And I started to look for it. It was just on the internet selling for £15. And I said, okay, I'm going to get it somehow. I couldn't find a shop that actually ships it to Israel, so I need to wait for somebody to go abroad and actually purchase it for me. And then I discovered that there's another bottle waiting at the Whiskey Exchange, which is also from the 1970s, just waiting for a collector to buy it. And I decided that instead of opening the friend's bottle, I'm going to buy the 1970s bottle from the Whiskey Exchange, and then I'm going to compare the two, so we'll know exactly what the bottle that my friend has and also how it tastes to this day. And the experiment I want to do is to share this event, so-called, with more whiskey friends, such as Gal from the Whiskey Israel, yourself, Richard Patterson, Jumalt, which is Joshua Hutton from the Jewish Whiskey Society. And I just sent samples all over the world and also to many friends in Israel in order to get as many opinions about the whiskeys as possible, because this whiskey wasn't documented anywhere, not about nosing notes, history-wise, nothing.
Now, what did you find from, I know you're still collecting some opinions from some of the folks you sent the samples to. I know I sent you mine a few days ago, but what were the opinions you found? Because I have to imagine they were very different between the 1970s bottles and the current bottle, right?
Oh yeah, the opinions were. It actually, it's very amazing. I was quite amazed to see that the differences between the opinions are quite extreme. For example, I really liked the old blend. So did another friend of mine. On the other hand, you didn't. Joshua called it cream of the cream of the tar. I think it was.
I didn't think it was bad, but I did get a vinegary note to it. And I'm not sure why. I don't know if that was old bottle effect or what. But it wasn't bad. But it was
actually got
it
also
outstanding.
It wasn't. I don't know if it wasn't outstanding. I found it actually creamy. There was a bit of vinegar inside. Gal found that as well. I just a touch of it. I need to actually taste it again because as I'm writing the posts about this, I still haven't done the second part of the posts, which actually has all the opinions. So all the opinions will be posted in the Whiskey Israel blog. I think about in a week time. I'm still waiting for notes from Richard Patterson, another friend here in Israel. I don't know if it was the old bottle effect or not. There was a wee bit of vinegar, but there's also I found a bit of smoke in it, and also found a bit of cream and a bit of caramel. I really enjoyed it, but I know that you liked the newer version more than the older version. So did actually Joshua, so did Gal, and actually I liked the older version better than the newer version, because I found it to be more complex in a way.
Yeah, tell me what you got out of the newer version.
Wow, I tasted that like almost 2 months ago, and I didn't write anything. Actually, I video recorded the whole session. I don't really remember. I just remember that it was light, floral. There was a lot of flowers in it. A bit, I don't remember if I remember correctly, but I think there was a bit of salt, just a wee bit. It was nice. It wasn't full bodied. There wasn't a long finish or something. It was a nice, as Igal is another friend from Whiskey Israel, called it, it's a nice supermarket blend.
What did you guys learn from this?
Well, as you know, I'm not an expert about whiskey just yet. I'm still learning ever since I got back from Isla when I met you.
We're all still learning, Shai. Be modest. It's okay. Be proud of yourself. You come far, my friend.
I'm still a newbie in my own eyes. But I like blends, as you know. In my opinion, the younger blends from the 1970s, maybe even before that, I haven't tried blends older than that, were much richer than the young blends of current time. In my opinion, probably the master blenders, because blends were more popular, probably put in those blends much more than they have put that they're putting in the young blends today. Young blends today, I think, they're putting into them what is necessary to create such a blend that will be in a low price that will still content the buyers. But if the buyers want something more complex, they will go to aged blends, will go to single malt, etc. I honestly thought that blend from the 1970s was rich, was full. And I could compare that, for example, even though it is a young blend, at home I have Cutty Sock 18 and I have some other aged blends. And I could actually compare that young blend from the 1970s to these aged blends. It was just had more heart into it.
Interesting. And what did you learn about the variety of tasting notes, because we all tasted the same whiskey, yet we all came up with dramatically different opinions of it?
I don't remember all the notes again because I haven't edited the second post yet, but most of you guys who have more experience than me with whiskeys actually in the older blend found the same tastes and same nose effects. For example, you and Gal and Joshua did agree about the older whiskey with some differences, and with the younger one though there were quite a lot of differences. Some of you liked it, some of you disliked it. I think that it just confused the palate, in a way for everybody, because I think maybe because the old bottle was, in comparison, and was standing there, it had a psychological effect on the new one. Maybe some of us wanted the new one to be better. Maybe some of us wanted the new one to be worse. And I think that actually affected the notes. But for me, it was quite funny to see how people liked the tastes and the differences. There was a lot of variety. I still don't know what to think of it until I edit the post, and then I'll be smarter there. But it's interesting. I just want to say that the bottles I sent, the samples in for everybody are the new clean sterile bottles I bought from a company that actually makes the bottles for the medicine industry. So there was no, you know, bottle effect of the miniature on those samples. So everybody got exactly the same thing in sterile bottles. So nothing could affect the actual taste of the whiskey. So the differences are from the tasters.
What else did you learn from this?
Well, not taste-wise and not nosing-wise. What I did learn was actually documentation-wise and how people look at whiskey through time. If today every single malt is highly documented in a very nice bottle with a very nice box with a whole lot of words on the box, you know, describing the whiskey, where it came from, the casks, the origins, etc., etc., and every single malt or every aged blend has a special something in it, and you know, people just make a whole festival out of every expression, which is excellent and which is really, really nice, because I learned a lot from it. In the old days, whiskey was just whiskey. You just drank it. You had it next to, I don't know, you know, in front of the television or with dinner or with friends. You just had your glass of whiskey, your nice blend. I mean, somebody wrote as a response to the original post about this blend archaeology, hey, this is the blend that my grandmother used to drink. People just used to enjoy whiskey as it is. They used to buy it. They used to drink it. They didn't compare it. They didn't collect it. They didn't, you know, try to see how much I can get on it on eBay. And because of that, documentation wasn't kept. So finding facts about a lot of whiskeys these days, even, you know, I think the most the expensive ones, you know, the aged ones, the really, really special ones, you can probably find a lot of documentation But with the more simple whiskeys, you know, the more daily whiskeys, the whiskeys that were just available to the general public for £10, £15, the blends that Richard Patterson's book describes, nobody knows anything about until today, because just nobody actually cared except enjoying them. And today they're becoming collector's items with no knowledge of them, which is really, really interesting to see how the whole, I don't want to call it a festival of I'm looking for the correct word. I have the word in Hebrew, but I forgot it in English. But you understand what I'm talking about. You know, right. The whole extravaganza about whiskey and that happens today with all the festivals and all the collections and the comparisons. It's really interesting, because what I saw that within 40 years, look what happened. Today, you take the simple blend that you can buy in the supermarket. Okay, in the supermarket, Hanesky Bannister. That's how you say the name.
Yeah, Hanky Bannister. Yeah,
Hanky Bannister. Thank you. You can find a lot of information about this blend on the internet. I mean, I saw it in blogs. I saw it in all kind of places, and that's a supermarket blend. You can find that amount of information on those kind of blends 40 years ago.
So what were you able to find out about Stewart's Cream of the Barley in your research?
Quite a lot, actually. I don't remember everything by heart, because I did write about it in August 2010 in the Whiskey Israel. But if I'll try to remember, I found several things. That it was a very likable blend, a daily blend, a simple blend, which actually Sandy Hislop described as one of his, how do you call it? A very noble or something like that, because I got via the public relations of Shivas to him, that Stewart's Cream of the Barley switched hands quite often. It was but somewhere along the way, it was, I'm sorry, Mark, just one second, please.
Sure.
I'll restart. Oh, somewhere along the way, it was advertised as having, I forgot the exact name of the distillery, a big part of that distillery, single malt in it. If I'll just go onto the blog, I'll probably be able to tell you the exact name.
And we'll post a link to the blog at the website.
Thank you. But apparently it wasn't the case. There was a lot of misleading information about this blend to sell it, even though it wasn't so. So it was a very known blend, or very likable, or public by the
very
general
public.
Very popular, thank you. Very popular blend. But in order to push sales up, they actually used half-truths about it. And the original owners, which were Stewart and Sons from Dundee, at some point in time, which I wasn't quite certain about when it happened, sold it and, you know, just went through a lot of transitions. But for some odd reason, the name stayed with a blend that is still available to this day from unknown reasons. Because, you know, nobody actually looks for it. It's not, you can't find it in supermarkets very generally, in general availability. Although I was told it's supposed to be that way. When I asked people about it, nobody seemed to seen it in supermarkets or in regular shops. The only places I found it were in actually whiskey special shops on the internet, which is kind of weird. So this blend seems to just, you know, somehow survived the movement of the times without a real reason, or so it would seem.
And we should explain how you managed to get these bottles back to Israel from the UK, and your dad gets the credit for that, right?
Yeah, my father gets the credit. He also actually gave me a heart attack with that. What happened that my dad, it was during October, decided to go with his girlfriend Rachel, Rachel, to London. And it was his first time that he went to London. And I told him, okay, listen, if you're going, we'll sit with you, we'll tell you where to go, because I've been to London and my wife actually lived there for 2.5 years. She was relocated there. And we both really, really like London. Love it is actually the correct word. So we sat with him, and part of the monuments I told him that he has to go and see was Vinopolis and the Whiskey Exchange. In you know, in future thinking that I'm going to get him to bring back a bottle. Later on, I thought, okay, maybe I'll try to help him, and, you know, just to ease up. After all, he's going to do some schlepping. I'll purchase the bottles in advance, and he'll just have to come and collect them. The thing is, he was supposed to take a mini computer with him to check emails. And I told him, listen, I'm going to update you via the emails what's going on. While he was en route to London, I actually communicated with the Whiskey Exchange, got the new bottle, remembered about the old bottle, asked him to get that for me as well. They shipped both bottles from their HQ in the center of London to Vinopolis shop. Told me, listen, excuse me, the bottles are waiting for you there. Your father can come, he can take them. So I text messaged my father's girlfriend, because she had the mobile phone, to listen, two bottles are waiting at the Whiskey Exchange Vinopolis. And then I got a reply, well, that's nice, but how are they going to get to you? I thought, I just got a heart attack while that happened. I mean, I was just about to find, I mean, what do you mean, how they're going to get to me? We spoke about this. So I actually phoned them up and I said, we said that you're going to go visit Vinopolis and it's going to wait for you while you're there. It's on your route. You said you're going to be there in about 2 days' time. Oh, yeah, but we decided to take it off the route. Okay, but didn't you see my emails? No, we didn't take the computer at the end. Oh, okay. Can you please go and take the bottles? Well, if they're already waiting, yeah, all right, we'll do that. So they weren't there. They called me from the shop, so I'll give, you know, the credit card, etc., for the bottles. And then they schlepped him. My father actually schlepped it in his backpack for the whole day. And then when he got back to Israel, I got the bottles on top of another bottle. It was waiting for me in England as well.
Fun story. And what did your dad think of these whiskeys? I'm assuming you shared them with him.
Yeah. When we opened the booth, actually, a month after I got the bottle, because I want to do a whole festival out of it, we decided to have a meeting of Whiskey Israel Society. Unfortunately, half of the members couldn't come, but we did it at the house of the friends who has the original bottle. So we were sitting there, all of us, four of us actually, sipping on these two blends. And my father said, I asked him, so what do you think about these whiskeys? So he told me, listen, I don't know a lot about whiskey. You know exactly how much I know about whiskey. I can tell you what I like and what I don't like. I said, okay, so go ahead. He liked the older version better than the new one. He liked that it was creamy, it was sweeter. The new one was was less sweet actually. It was a bit flatter, if I can say that, according mm-hmm. to what he told me. He couldn't, you know, get all the expressions and nose and taste from the whiskies like most of you whiskey experts can. I'm still halfway there, actually less than halfway getting there. But he did tell me that he liked the 1970s version better. So, well, that's something as well.
Well, thank you again for letting me try this. It was an interesting experience, and I appreciate your thinking of me and inviting me to take part in this, and I can't wait to read the rest of the notes on the Whiskey Israel blog.
Well, thank you for tagging along to this playful joy. I enjoyed this very, very much, this whole experiment, and I was glad you and the others were happy to come along on this weird journey. For a 15 pounds blend, having three posts on Whiskey Israel with me, you know, getting information, it's like, okay, this is a 15 pound blend. Why are you doing this? Sheer interest. I mean, I probably got something from my father because he's now finishing his history degree, and I like history, but apparently not that kind of type of history that he does. It was really, really fun experience and quite enjoyable. And now I've got myself a 1970 bottle standing here in the in my whiskey cabinet, so that's fun. Actually, the original owner of the original bottle is looking for a buyer. So, you know, now that we have got a lot of information about the whiskey, he'll be happy to sell it to the higher bidder, I think.
You can find out more about Shai's research at the Israel Whiskey blog. There's a link at the WhiskeyCast website. And Shai will be posting his final report soon. That's where you'll be able to read my tasting notes for Stewart's Cream of the Barley. In the meantime, I've been working through some of the samples on my tasting table this week. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with the Blanton's Straight from the Cask Single Barrel Bourbon. It's primarily sold only in travel retail and export markets, but U.S. listeners may be able to track down a bottle here and there. My sample was bottled at 64.5% ABV. The nose is intense with notes of vanilla, honey, dark chocolate, and brown sugar. The taste, equally intense and mouth-puckering, peppery with a cinnamon blast that peaks and fades slowly to reveal brown sugar, caramel, and vanilla notes that linger seamlessly into the finish. Of course, Blanton's is a sister to George T. Stagg in the Buffalo Trace family, and this version combines the intensity of Stagg with the smoothness of Blanton's. It's outstanding. I'm giving Blanton's Straight from the Cask a 94. Opened up a couple of Aaron samples as well. First off, the oldest single malt Aaron has released yet, the 14-year-old bottled at 46% ABV. The nose has notes of toffee, vanilla, and Christmas cake, along with subtle touches of caramel and salt water. The taste starts off salty, followed by notes of cinnamon-baked apples, along with dates, honey, and a touch of black tea with a good mouthfeel and balance. The finish has touches of cinnamon and brine. It's very nice. I'm scoring the Aaron 14-year-old an 88. Last summer, Aaron released a special bottling to celebrate its 15th anniversary. Just 600 bottles of this limited edition were produced at 54.6% ABV. It came from three ex-bourbon casks filled soon after the distillery went into production. The nose is rich with caramel, brown sugar, and vanilla notes, along with hints of brine and dried fruits. The taste puckers up your mouth with cinnamon, brown sugar, dried orange peel, and touches of milk chocolate and salt. The finish has lingering cinnamon balanced with dried orange peels and touches of brine and cocoa. It's excellent. I'm scoring the Aaron 15th Anniversary Limited Edition a 91. You'll find all of my tasting notes in the WhiskeyCast smartphone apps. The iPhone app is sponsored by the Glenrothes, while the Android version comes to you courtesy of Benromic. They're also available at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find links to the WhiskeyCast Facebook page and my Twitter feed, the calendar of events, my photo galleries, and details on the Wish You Were Here travel photo contest, and, of course, a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com, and my email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cast Strength Media, copyright 2011, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.